Welcome to the Foresight Health Roundup podcast, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Thursday, February 27th. Never thought we'd side with Russia over Europe. Then again, I never thought we'd elect a convicted felon as president. Want another surprise? We may need more hospital beds. At least according to a new study that we're going to talk about on today's show with Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you two doing this morning? Dave?
What a difference a week makes. Last week, we were in the deep freeze. This week, spring has sprung, and I have a spring in my step. See what I did there? I just love the English language.
Shorts and t-shirt weather, right, Dave?
Exactly.
Julie, how are you?
Well, I have spent a couple of days with my team in glorious San Francisco. It hit 68 degrees and bluebird skies yesterday, so no complaints. But the highlight of my week was my Waymo ride. I love that thing.
What it?
The autonomous car.
Really?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Wow.
I can program my own music. It's Waymo good.
It's Waymo good.
I see what you did there, Dave. Yeah,
you do love the English language. That's great. Okay, before we talk about the market for hospital beds, let's talk about other things you thought you'd never see in healthcare this year. There is certainly a lot to choose from. Dave, what happened during the first 2 months of 2025 in healthcare that you thought you'd never see, good or bad?
Well, a whole slew of things have happened, and what is unusual is I think the U.S. healthcare system has entered into this unprecedented period of disequilibrium where small changes and events can have disproportionate impact. That's both bad and good news. There was another shooting this week at a UPMC hospital in York, Pennsylvania that killed two people and wounded five, got very little notice. The Trump administration is running roughshod over Medicaid. Too many innocent Americans will get hurt, but perhaps needed changes will also emerge. It just feels like a ticking time bomb out there, which I've never really felt before to the extent I feel right now.
Yeah, it's like we've lived a lifetime in just 2 months already.
Yeah.
Julie, what have you seen this year in healthcare that you thought you'd never see?
I never thought I'd see a death from measles.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's not going to be the only one, right?
No. We're going to see a lot of them down there.
Yeah, that's the future. That is shocking. It's been 10 years. I read it was 2015. So 10 years, right?
Yeah, it's not like it's that unusual, but it is like what's going on down there. It's just point of what we're going to see.
Measles was eradicated. I mean, no deaths, no measles in 2000.
Right. For years, yeah.
So this has all come back since then. Thank you, RFK Jr., right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, it's going to be nasty. Thanks, Julie. For me, it was my Medicare card. Not that I didn't think I'd live this long, but it was a remarkably simple and painless experience. I applied for Medicare Part A and Part B, got my card. Then I applied for the Part D drug plan, got my card, all within 30 days, believe it or not.
But it's paper. It's a paper card. Come on into the 21st century.
Yeah. They make great perforations, right? You know, it came out of that bigger sheet of paper pretty easily. So thanks to all the federal healthcare workers toiling behind the scenes for years who made this an easy and seamless process. Now I hope you all find new jobs soon. Okay, let's talk about the hospital bed market. We talk all the time on this show about how we need more health and less healthcare. That translates into fewer hospitals, fewer hospital beds, and less inpatient capacity. Now, a new study that's gotten a lot of attention says we're all wet. Let me tell you about it and get your reaction. The study appeared in JAMA Network Open on February 19th. It was done by health services researchers at the UCLA Medical School and the Greater Los Angeles VA. They said the average U.S. hospital occupancy rate was 63.9% during the 10-year period before the pandemic. After the pandemic, when the public health emergency ended in 2023, the occupancy rate rose to 75.3%. That increase was due primarily to a nearly 16% decline in the number of hospital beds between those two periods, from 802,000 down to 674,000. With a projected increase in hospitalizations because of the aging population, without adding any new hospital beds, the occupancy rate will shoot up to 85% by 2032, or in just 7 years. They call that occupancy rate, quote, dangerous, close quote. We would need a 10% increase in hospital beds, along with a 10% decline in projected hospitalizations to avoid a crisis. And just when I got my Medicare card. Dave, what do you think of all this? Are we headed for a hospital bed crisis? And what can we do from a policy perspective to avoid it?
Yeah, the future is already here. It's just unevenly distributed, right? This particular analysis uses straight line projections to reach its conclusions. That means it misses the very uneven distribution of hospital beds throughout the country. There's no shortage of hospital beds in my neighborhood of Lakeview in Chicago. Advocate is spending $1 billion on a new patient tower just a couple of blocks from here. Capacity correlates with levels of commercial insurance coverage. Everybody knows that. We don't do much about it, but everybody knows that. And that's why low-income rural and urban communities disproportionately experience the negative impacts and increased mortality associated with inadequate access. And it's only going to get worse with all the proposals in the new Trump administration's budgets that will slash Medicaid spending across the country. Secondly, the problem is real. We've started watching the new HBO series, The Pit, that chronicles hour-by-hour activity in an overwhelmed Pittsburgh emergency department. Noah Wiley plays the lead physician, and he is incredible in the role. Most remember him as the wet behind the ears doctor in ER a million years ago, but he's really mastered that role of managing in a chaotic environment. The stresses on caregivers are just enormous. It actually makes me angry watching this, Dave, because I think of all the great, dedicated, talented people working away under these miserable conditions and just can't stand the fact that we can't organize our resources in such a way as to get them better conditions in which to work. The boarding issue is tangible in this show as patients get stashed in the ED until beds become available in the main hospital. You know, in one scene, an administrator comes down to the ED and chastises the Noah Wiley character for its low Prescani scores. Yeah.
Do they say Prescani?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And they threaten his job. And he responds, he goes, what do you expect when we've got people stashed for hours and days in the ED waiting for a room upstairs? She could care less. The administrator could care less. She just says, you know, get your scores up. So third thing, Meatloaf sang 2 out of 3 ain't bad. Remember that song?
Right.
And the Iron Triangle for hospitals is simultaneously trying to achieve high quality, lower costs, and increased access. There was a 1994 book by William Kissick titled Medicine's Dilemma, Infinite Needs and Finite Resources. And Kissick states the dilemma quite nicely. The U.S. system can get 2 of 3 of these goals, you know, higher quality, lower costs, and increased access, but not all three. There just isn't enough money to make that happen. But I find this type of linear thinking extremely dangerous. The first thing you need to do when you're in a ditch is to stop digging. Massive new investment in hospitals, as this analysis suggests we need and many support, is not the answer. More of the same approach to providing healthcare in this country will provide more of the same dismal outcomes. As Steve Jobs might say, it's time to think different. You know, let's figure out how to keep people healthier, how to eliminate waste. decreased demand for hospitals because we got healthier populations. You know, remember Einstein's definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different outcomes. It's just not going to happen.
I don't know whether I should watch that show, The Pit, Dave, or just avoid it like the plague. Because
we can only watch one episode at a time. It's that intense. But I'd recommend it. I mean, it's doing what we do.
Yeah.
It's nice grounding.
Got it. Thank you. Julie, any questions for Dave?
Wow. Gosh, another show. You know, Dave, researchers in this study really looked at hospital bankruptcies and private equity's role and really pointed the finger there. Can you see a world where public-private partnerships are more robust or private equity could actually help this kind of doomsday scenario?
Yeah, the researchers are missing the forest for the trees. Of course, I can imagine a world where private equity and public-private partnerships contribute to the solution, but that means that we get the payment incentives right. And, you know, we've been trying to do that forever and just haven't been able to achieve it. But if we can, and again, that's a big if, PE and other public-private ways of doing things can deliver low-cost, high-quality hospital operations. There's no reason they can't. In the meantime, though, absent that type of radical payment reform, PE-owned facilities will exploit opportunities to find excess profits. Remember, they're heat-seeking missiles for profits. That's what they do, and there's an amoral quality to the space. So things like out-of-network billing, service line decisions, only doing things that generate a profit, and excessive cost-cutting will be the norm, and that's what we see all over the place. You know, and by the way, lots of nonprofits are doing exactly the same thing. So it's not like we should be picking on just private equity owned hospitals. But if we can't get the payment models right, the country will need to move to a utility model with all of the issues that that portends. Hello, Europe.
I'm getting worked up and it's not even 9 o'clock central.
I've done my job.
You did. Yep. You flipped the switch, Dave. Thanks. All right, Julie, you're younger than Dave and me, much younger. Do you think there'll be a hospital bed if and when you ever need one? And what can the market do to make sure you have one if you do?
Just want to underscore much younger.
Yeah. I won't cut that out.
How old are you when you don't know how old you are?
You know, this is a tough one. I mean, we've talked about it for years, but we are at this stage where we're going to have more people over 65 and under 18. So I don't know. I believe we are likely underbedded in certain regions, but the devil's in the details for sure. And I was kind of intrigued by some of the drivers that they pointed out. You know, they said it's not really being driven by increase in hospitalizations, but by decrease in staffed hospital beds, right? So this is really comes back to workforce, nursing workforce, physician workforce. And while we've been talking about shortages in these areas for a long time, we all know that this has been kind of a more recent acute issue. And it doesn't help, of course, that I think our State Department has a freeze on international nurses still, maybe. So, you know, when I talk to people in the market about things like this, I learn interesting tidbits. And one interesting factoid I learned this week from a health system leader who used to be in Louisiana and is now in California, that there's a stat that's, don't quote me exactly, but goes something like this. Louisiana, you know, they saw this physician shortage coming and they partnered with a number of medical schools in the state to really ramp up programs. And they are graduating as many doctors or perhaps maybe as many resident seats in California this year as they are in Louisiana. So just think about that for a second. Think about how much larger California is than Louisiana. And Louisiana planned because their back was up against the wall. And states like California maybe have not felt that back up against the wall yet. So I think we are getting to one of those moments when healthcare does react with their back up against the wall. And I was stunned to read in this study that the author said, we need more innovative care delivery models that can reduce hospitalizations by diverting would-be admissions to specially designed acute care clinics. That's a quote.
Hello.
I mean, where have you been? Yeah. So there's something going on here. And if we can use moments like this to not use this study to build more beds, but to actually really work on triage systems and, you know, alternative sites of care. Like, what a win that would be. So UCLA is taking the opportunity to market their next day clinic solution, which is trying to divert patients to different levels of acuity care. And, you know, I've seen plenty of examples where this is working around the country. Highmark, actually, unlike many systems that have not had success with these micro hospitals, Highmark is having success with micro hospitals. We're seeing it in home-based models. We've gone through kind of a hospital at home V1, and I think we will see kind of a hospital care at home model that perhaps looks very different in V2. But my questions for the study are like, okay, does the data look at data by region and diagnosis? Are they looking at admissions that could have been avoided in some of these ways? There's so much in here that could be done. And it's just frustrating to think that this study could be used in ways that it shouldn't be in areas that actually are not underbedded.
Right. Yeah, the answers are out there. And let's hope this doesn't paint over them. Thanks, Julie. Dave, any questions for Julie?
Well, I loved your answer. And by the way, the answer to all your questions is no. It was just straight line analysis. But I really liked what you were doing around the margins there. It reminded me of that Buffalo Springfield song from the 70s. There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. And I think this study is just a classic example of the dangers of linear thinking. So here's my question for you, pretty simply. What's your favorite nonlinear solution to this presumed hospital bed crisis?
Oh my God, I don't just have one favorite. Like, imagine if we could do just simple things like pre and post-surgical care better. UPMC is doing this for their rural population. It's reducing length of stay. It's creating more convenience for patients. Like, there's a just simple solution. Of course, my favorite, Dave, you know, is preventative care and early intervention, but I've, you know, long kind of hung that up. I mean, let's talk about crazy ideas. Like, imagine if hospitals in, you know, certain regions collaborated and could dynamically allocate bed capacity across the region. Never going to happen. But, you know, there's some wishes on the list there. I think what's really happening out there, like real, this is a real example. One of the largest health systems in the country is absolutely feeling the impact of GLP-1s on bariatric surgeries. I think I've talked about this here before, but, you know, when I sit with a system that tells me that and is trying to figure out how to get ahead of that and how to get a cut of that, I mean, that's back up against the wall. Another kind of real set of examples, I'm watching some of the largest systems in the country actually adopt smart front door strategies that are helping patients triage to the right level of care across their now new kind of service line developed sites of care. They're, you know, the largest systems in the country see that they need to compete in their local markets. And they're starting to not necessarily do this out of capacity problem issues, but out of business model drivers, right? So, you know, is that nonlinear?
Yes. Yes.
But they're examples that are real, and we need to see more of them.
Thanks, Julie. Well, my prediction is what we've all fear based on this conversation is that the numbers in this study are going to appear in a lot of PowerPoint presentations to justify building more hospitals and adding more hospital beds. So you guys go to more presentations than I do. So let me know when you see it and we'll talk about it. Let's talk about other big healthcare news this week. I know you know it when you see it. Julie, what else happened that we should know about?
Well, Dave mentioned this at the top of the show, but this shooting at UPMC, I mean, what is happening in the world? And I talked to a couple of folks from UPMC earlier this week, and they're rocked. So I think healthcare isn't ready for the onslaught of crazy that's coming its way. It's sad.
Yeah. Dave, what other news is worth mentioning?
Well, I got a couple of things. One, Dave, your comment about the PowerPoint presentations, I'm giving a speech to a Michigan Architects Association in a couple of weeks. 400 people attending. That's just Michigan.
Yeah.
Right? Well, anyway, it's going to continue until it doesn't. This week, renowned healthcare futurist Ian Morrison died at the age of 72, which actually seems young to me now. He was an astute, funny guy. He liked to say he'd gone from Scotland, where death was imminent, to Canada, where death was inevitable, to California, where death is optional. Well, Miss Ian. Goldman Sachs was out this week with a study that said they expect 60 million people to be on the GLP-1 medications by 2028, and that will boost productivity in the United States by 1%, several trillion dollars, because people will be healthier and more productive.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay.
That's
yeah,
big.
That, yeah. All right. Now, some good news to end the show. Very, very good. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can subscribe to the Roundup on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.